When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Spent the weekend. The junior senator from Alabama did the Republican Party proud. And after her State of the Union response, everyone knew that was going to be the cold open on Saturday Night Live. And it was. And Scarlett Johansson did a fabulous job. If you haven't seen it, by all means, watch the both of them, because I think they're both worth watching. One for the creepy, oh my gosh, what is wrong with this person? And the other for the comedy, because you got to laugh at it. If Rome is burning, we need some entertainment. Now, you go, what's going on with this this Alabama junior senator, Katie Britt? What's going on with her? She can't be this creepy, this weird, this far out there. And the answer is, oh, yeah, she can. Because understand, this is who the Republican Party thinks you are. This is who the GOP thinks women are. Basically, the Handmaid's Tale. And understand, Katie Britt is someone who, in my view, is without conviction, doesn't even understand what the average working family goes through. And what you saw was their half-baked attempt to connect with working people. Because look at her background. She was an aide and then chief of staff for retired Alabama Senator Richard Shelby. She built her credibility on the inside. She achieved her power. She achieved her prestige, not from being out there knocking on doors and kissing babies and doing on the ground work where she might actually bump into a working person. No, this is all about fundraising and the connections that you make as a chief of staff for a senator. This isn't about beliefs or convictions. This is purely about connections. That's how she got there. And what you saw in her response was simple. This was her attempt to pretend like she's an actual working person. I'm going to invite you into my kitchen. Look, I've been around a lot of working people. You look at that kitchen, that is not a working person's kitchen. There's nothing, there's no clutter on the counters. There's no, sterile. And this is where they have these tough conversations, in a place where looks like a showroom. Now you go, but they cleaned up. No, they probably had the help clean up. But I look at this and the creepy response. I got to tell you, there are a couple of people who are really thrilled with Katie Britt, you know, doing the face flop. That would be Bobby Jindal. Remember him and his weird Marco Rubio with his water obsession. And we'll throw Sarah Huckabee in there as well, because she didn't knock it out of the park either. But understand, think of every Republican response to a Democratic State of the Union. Think of all of them and how creepy and weird they are, because they're trying to connect with average, everyday working people. People they wouldn't know how to find one, let alone be able to relate. So what we get are these creepy moments. And they get mocked, and they get, look at, you know, how out of touch they are, or, you know, look at them. No, no, no. This is what they think of us. This is what they think we want to hear. And, you know, the weird, bizarre twist to the story about the little girl that was sex trafficked is a perfect example of them trying to connect desperately, even if they have to, you know, basically pull a story out of, well, an orifice. Now understand, the story that she told is true. It's absolutely true. But it's not Joe Biden's fault. Joe Biden didn't do that, but she wanted you to believe it did, he did. That happened in Mexico, not here in the U.S., and it happened during the George W. Bush years, not during the Biden years. But if you heard her, she basically blamed Biden for it and said, we wouldn't allow this in a third world country, and nor should we. But, you know, as I'm watching this, I didn't know that that was the story that she was alluding to. My mind went to the place of, well, if this is true, and I sure hope it's not, I pray for this little girl that that's not reality, because I want that for no one. My question is, what did you do? You are one of the 100 most powerful people in our government. You are a U.S. senator who has the ability and the bully pulpit to really to do something. So what did you do after hearing this horrific story? What action did you take? What legislation did you move? What did you do? And I don't see anything. But use the story to go and blame Biden. And understand, her response, much like Republican responses of the past, it's all Biden's fault. It's all the Democrats' fault. It's them. It's not us. She didn't come with any policy aims whatsoever. This was all, he's bad. Instead of going, hey, we've got an agenda that's going to actually really help working people. And then laying that out. Now, here's the thing. Here's the dirty little secret. I know they don't have one. They don't have an agenda that's going to help. You know, the inflation thing, they've got no way of fixing that. Well, it was Biden's spending. Never mind the fact that Trump spent $7.5 trillion. Hello? That helped. If that's the problem, that? Now, I come back to this weird little spiel that she gave. And she even repeated the, are you better off now than you were in 2020 line? You know, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And the answer for most people is, yeah, we're better off. Because if you remember, 4 years ago today, I actually went and I looked this up. Trump was all upset. Trump was furious that the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus an emergency. They hadn't declared it a pandemic or anything like that. It's an emergency. They declared it an emergency. And this went against his narrative of, it's just a flu. It's a seasonal flu. We'll get past it. No problem. Never mind the fact that, again, you know, we exceeded, you know, like 1,000 cases when just days before. It was like 15. And you still have the cruise ship floating in the Pacific that they won't allow dock because it will bring our numbers up. But, hey, things were so much better. And oh, by the way, the Senate Republicans, they blocked an emergency paid sick leave bill from moving forward because Democrats had sought to guarantee 14 days of paid sick leave for anyone affected by the coronavirus because we wanted people to stay home. So you have a bill, say, hey, you know, for these 2 weeks, this is how long we think it takes to go through this process. We're going to pay you to stay home. No, Lamar Alexander prevented the bill from bypassing the Republican-controlled Health Committee. Dead. And look, you know, this is one of those moments where you go, surprised? No, not surprised at all, because this is who they are. So when I saw Katie Britt give her thing, I'm going, yeah, Republican senator who is soulless. And understand, I truly believe that, because these are people who have been in the game for so long that they don't know how to connect with working people. They try for messaging purposes, and they've think tank, you know, dreamt up this stuff, and they've focus group approved, and they have this view of what working people are. Is that what you saw when you talked to your friends about what Katie Britt brought to the screen? Is that what you saw? The answer is no. Now, you know, where does this go from here? Big, big jump for Biden. In fact, Ezra Klein, who had been saying for a while that Biden should back down, he should, you know, not run for re-election because, you know, he was going to lose and all this, actually called the State of the Union a comeback for his electoral hopes. And actually, if he keeps this up, he's going to win. Now, Biden raised about $10 million over a 24-hour period. So big, big bit of enthusiasm. And look, I got to tell you, I was not really high on the president's public performances. I love his policies by far. Absolutely one of the best presidential policies of my lifetime. But, you know, was a little questioning if he's going to bring the class war. And he did. And for that, Trump did what Trump does. Mocked him. Went to his campaign thing. Mocked him. Because, well, that's what they do. Now, the president has a stuttering issue. He's had that for a long time. And there are times where when he gets, you know, worked up, that stutter comes back. So what does Trump do? He mocks him. And look, this is what the Trump base wants, because again, that's who they are, because Trump gives them the ability, gives them the feeling that they can be the worst versions of themselves. And, you know, as I've said a million times, the cruelty is the point. The more cruel you can be, the more vicious you can be, the more the base eats it up. That's the entertainment value. Because someone asks, you know, why do people go to Trump's rallies? That's it. We can go after people. We can, yeah, we'll show them. No, it's going to be an interesting campaign. Because if Biden keeps up what he started on Thursday during the State of the Union and really gets on the offensive and defends his policies, he's got a good shot. I love the fact that, as I said the last show, I love the fact that he came out and said this is about defending democracy. The two things he's got to go after is we're defending democracy and we are going to make lives better. We're going to fight for the little guy. That's Biden's secret sauce and the way forward. All Trump's got is cruelty. That's it. Because there's no policy there. And if you get into a policy discussion, this is a guy who has nothing. He's got no chops whatsoever because they don't have any policy. Trump has already told us what his agenda is for a second term. Retribution. Did I mention retribution? That's payback. We're going to make patronage great again. That's the agenda. They're going to fire all those government workers and replace them with good loyalists who are going to do Trump's work, not your work. And I don't know how that makes people's lives any better. I know it isn't going to, but for a very short period of time, it'll make the red hats happy because, well, we're making other people miserable. Now, the response I got from the right on the speech was interesting. You know, he was all drugged up, and yet, you know, Trump's with the Adderall kind of makes you wonder. What do they call him? Jacked Up Joe. And to be honest, at 81 years old, I don't think he's getting jacked up on anything. That is what it is. But, you know, they argued that he was too aggressive, too angry. No, the guy came out on fire. The guy gave the State of the Union speech, which is, we need somebody who's going to get out there and fight. Other people told me, oh, they were too political. It's too political of a speech. That was a campaign event. That wasn't a State of the Union. It was a State of the Union. It's saying where things are. And he came with policy. I would love to see Trump give an hour plus speech on policy and actually talk about what things he wants to do to make lives better. For me, when he started talking about manufacturing, when Biden started saying, you know, where is it written that we can't be the world's leader in manufacturing? Yeah, where is that written? Oh, yeah, in the corporate boardrooms, which is why we need to do a whole bunch to pull that back. Now, for me, I think you saw Biden's speech. I think you saw that really weird, creepy Republican response. And the question from now is, how do you use that? Knowing what we know, what the president has done policy-wise. And for me, I would like to believe that on a policy level, we can have those discussions. Is this policy good? And I love those videos of people going around going, hey, would you be in favor of this policy? You know, if Trump did this? Oh, yeah, I'd love this. Oh, no, wait a minute. That was Biden's policy. Well, it's got to be horrible. Because we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs to whenever we hear one side or the other to oppose. I would love to say that there's a policy that I know Trump is running on that I can support. There really isn't. Maybe tariffs on China. But I saw what he did during his term. Wasn't great. Did put tariffs on, but there was no follow-up. It's kind of that way with him all along. We had a lot of infrastructure weeks, didn't build any infrastructure. Had a lot of manufacturing weeks, didn't have any manufacturing. So we got a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do. But I want to hear your thoughts. What did you think of the speech? What did you think of the response? How do you think this campaign's going to go? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So our quote of the day comes from President Biden at a campaign event over the weekend. Talking about Donald Trump, he said he's been sucking up to dictators all over the world. And the truth is, yeah. I mean, remember the love affair? Remember the love letters that he got from Kim Jong-un? And look, I gave him credit for going and meeting with Un and trying to forge some relationship so that we can maybe tap down some craziness. Didn't work. Still crazy. But, you know, some love letters were exchanged. Now, here's the weird thing. And this is where, over the weekend, my mind went into this place because I saw this story about the money that he owes E. Jean Carroll. Some $92 million bond that he's got to put up so that he can appeal the decision. And I started doing some math, some quick math in my head. There's the $355 million that's accruing interest because of what went on in New York. It's going to be more like $450. He's got you know, legal bills out the wazoo. He's easily in for a cool $1 billion. And then you see this story that came out of it was an AP story, but it comes out of London, where a judge in London said, sorry, Don, you're going to have to pay $382,000 to Christopher Steele's group, this Orbis Business Intelligence group, because, well, last month they threw out the lawsuit saying that, you know, all the stuff that they had, all of the intelligence that they had pulled up was somehow bad for them. And so they tried to sue this Orbis, which is founded by Christopher Steele, because, you know, you remember a lot of the salacious stuff, like, you know, he was paying prostitutes. One of the things that caught my attention, though, is the lawyers were angry, said that, you know, the report contained shocking and scandalous claims about the president's personal conduct. One of them was, you know, allegations that he had paid bribes to Russian officials to further his business interest. And you go, I don't know. That sounds like something that Trump would do. I mean, and it sounds like something that he would want to go, yeah, of course I do that because I'm smart. You know, you grease the wheels, got to get things going. And my mind went to, you got to wonder how many people he's bribed in this country to get what he wants. But his case against Christopher Steele, now remember, the Russia hoax, that got chucked. And it's gotten chucked here as well. In 2020, a federal judge in Florida, of all places, dismissed Trump's lawsuit against Steele, also against Hillary Clinton and an FBI agent, you know, basically rejecting the claim that they helped concoct this Russia investigation. When the reality is, and this is the part that blows my mind, there was coordination. Now you go, well, there's no collusion. There was no meeting. No, there were, Robert Mueller documented 114 meetings of Trump campaign people with Russian assets. You know, did we forget about, you know, Paul Manafort handing off polling data to Russian assets? Did we forget about that? Did we forget about the meeting in the Seychelles and all of this stuff that went on? And I had someone, you know, ask me yesterday, you know, if I bought the collusion thing, and I said, no, I buy the coordination thing. And it's not like they had a big meeting and said, hey, how can we use Russian assets? And there wasn't that. These are people who had been doing business with each other for years. Carter Page had been doing business in Russia for years. In fact, was a kind of a, as if I'm getting this story right, almost a double agent, working for both sides because it's about the money. So when this whole collusion thing came up, I said, no, I don't know that there was ever any formal plan. It's kind of like how, you know, one of the mafia soldiers knows what the Don wants. You know, wink of the eye. And yeah, I know what that means. I know what I'm supposed to do. It's kind of like, better example, it's kind of like a judge put on the Supreme Court at the behest of the Federalist Society being against workers' rights and against women's rights and against the environment and against, you know, people holding corporations accountable. It's kind of like that without actually holding the meeting saying, are you against this? No, because they already know. So it's kind of like that in my view. So they knew what they were doing. They knew that, hey, if I put some of this information on, you know, my friends are going to help me. So was there a grand scheme, you know, where they convened a meeting? No. They were friends helping each other out, as they had done. So when I see these stories of Trump going, and remember what I said months ago, well, actually now it's a couple years now, as the Trumpites were going around making these fantastical claims of voter suppression and voter fraud and voter theft and magical voter boxes. And remember what I said then. I don't believe anything they say on Fox News. I only believe what happens in the court of law. When someone puts their hand on that Bible, the book that they swear to love so much, and swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help them God. And, you know, being jailed under the laws of perjury. That I believe. I believe what goes into the courtrooms. I believe what they say in front of the person in the robe. Because that's, well, that can get you thrown in jail. Now, here's the weird thing. A lot of the stuff that they said on Fox News got Fox News sued for a lot of money. So maybe there is some accountability after all. But for me, this is another one of those situations where you look at what's going on in the courts of law here and overseas, and all of Trump's positions are being chucked out. And he's being forced to pay, and pay a lot. So you start adding up all this money, and this is the part that's important. You start adding up all this money, and you say, where is he going to get it? Oh, he's a billionaire. I don't know. We've never really seen that. He's got a lot of properties, and you got to wonder how much of that is leaned to the hilt. It's a private company. You don't have access to those records, especially when you start hearing stories like this one. Evidently, in order to appeal the E. Jean Carroll judgment, he's got to come up with almost $92 million and didn't have it. So he goes to this federal insurance company and got a bond that was guaranteed through this federal insurance company, which is a subsidiary of this Chubb Group, which is headquartered in Switzerland, which the CEO, Evan Greenberg, served as one of Trump's trade advisory committee people. And again, not really clear if Trump put up collateral to obtain this bond from Chubb. And what they're saying is, look, this Chubb Group, they're in bed with the Russian oil and gas industry. They ensure the oil and gas extraction and transportation of Russia's fuel and fueling the war in Ukraine for Russia. That's what that's doing. And, you know, the CEO there once called Russian oil and gas one of the most promising activities of its Russian operations. Now you start going, is this Russian collusion? I'm not saying it isn't. I'm saying he went back to his old friends. He went back to his old friends who have ties where? To Russia. They make money there. They do business there. Even though, you know, evidently this company does business with some of our adversaries. Is this part of the Russian hoax? Am I catapulting the propaganda? No, I'm simply saying, look, he went to his friends, and his friends have ties. And when you start looking at the numbers, and those numbers start piling up, can you have a president who's indebted millions and millions of dollars? I mean, would that not make him somewhat compromised? Wouldn't you be concerned that there's some compromise there? That someone has the ability to pull some strings? Now, if you remember, you know, Trump's argument of you know, why he couldn't overvalue his properties. One of his arguments was, well, I can basically ask anything I want because the Saudis will give me whatever I want. And I remember saying at the time, I don't know if I want a president who thinks that way. Because that kind of makes it, I don't know, indebted to someone. And not to mention, you got the in-law, Jared Kush, $2 billion from the Saudis, even though the authority that oversees that money said don't do it, kind of makes you wonder. Again, it's the friendships, it's the working relationships, it's the business relationships that concern me. And what I said from the beginning, that is where, in my view, where the coordination began and ended. That simple. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. For our Free Speech TV audience, appreciate you being here. We'll see you back here next time. For our radio affiliates across the country, we're going to take a quick break. Back after this.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So George Santos showed up to the State of the Union. And look, you know, I guess you got floor privileges, I guess. But too soon? I mean, kind of too soon in my view. I mean, the fact that, you know, the whole ethics scandal, all of that, the federal fraud charges, all that. I don't know. It says a lot about him that he showed up. I know he can, but it's like a lot of things. I know you can, but should you? And here to share some thoughts on the State of the Union and maybe get a thought about George Santos as well, I've asked our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you make of Santos showing up? I know he can, but really, really?
Well, there's two things I want to say. One is, you know he can, but should he? And two, what are the current rules? Which, by the way, I bet you are going to change real, real soon with bipartisan support.
Yeah, no.
It's going to happen. When I got in my trouble and resigned, not expelled, but resigned from the House, after I got out of incarceration, Ellen Ratner, my friend and your friend, is like, look, you're a reporter now with Talk Media News Service. Come out. We want to go to dinner and you know, we'll go in the Capitol. And I said, look, I'll arrange for dinner. And when we went up to the Capitol, I said, Ellen, it was too soon.
Yeah.
I don't want to go inside. I don't want to do it. And you know Ellen Ratner. She said, okay, well, you know, trying to force me. And then we went up to the door. Now, this would have been Obama's State of the Union, okay? It would have been his first one. So we went up to the door, and I was going to let Ellen, you know, go ahead and go in. And I went to pull out my member's card so I could tell the officer this is Ellen Ratner and some reporters who were going inside. And he looked at me and he said, welcome back, Mr. Chairman. It's Capitol Hill Police. That card's not necessary. Welcome back. Then a guy that worked in the parking garage superintendent came over and he gave me a hug and he cried. And so I'm like, okay. So I went inside. But, you know, that was about, let's see, 3 years later.
Yeah.
You know, after I resigned. So I think there's a period of time where you might be welcome back. It depends what you did or how the members perceive it. In Santos's case, number one, he's not welcome back by anybody. Okay. He's just not welcome back. Two, he was expelled. Now, what I didn't realize till this happened, though, is that you have floor privileges. If you resign, you have floor privileges. I have always been told if you are expelled from Congress, absolutely no privileges, no floor privileges, no parking privileges, et cetera. I've always been told that. And you're not welcome as a former member in the former members group. But I found out today researching this that you do have floor privileges. So there's a bill that's going to be introduced. It'll be bipartisan. It'll say if you are expelled, If you resign, that's different. But if you're expelled, no floor privileges. Yeah. Privileges.
Or if you're in, you know, if you're, you know, there's got to be a couple other reasons why we just don't want you back. That's one of them. But you were in Congress for quite a long time, though.
Well, yes, and again, I was received back warmly. I can't complain, you know, whatsoever. The only person that gave me static about going back was John Boehner, what his office did. And they toyed with me for a few weeks, and I called them up, and I said, why don't we just take this issue to the Washington Post? And I had no problem with Boehner. But beyond that, you know, and look, I didn't expect to be welcomed back or to just rush into the Capitol, you know, to do that. I waited a period of time, and I felt it out. And friends of mine who were current members at that time said, look, just come on back in. And plus, Rick, I wasn't hanging around the floor of the House and going and bothering people. Let's put it that way. Santos, though, just doesn't have a support group, number one. But the fact he was expelled, I mean, you're thrown out of a group, then it's shocking that you come back. I think it took a lot of, not guts, it
gall.
Took a lot of nerve.
Yep.
It's stupidity, frankly, on Santos's part to come back. And they at least made him move out of the members' seats.
Yeah, I found it interesting that I'm going, you know, why? But I guess he just likes it's the attention. Yeah. He is most certainly attention junkie. So I want to get your thoughts on the whole speech. What'd you think of Biden's performance?
Here are the two things that everybody, and I'm going to say everybody, the political structure, political system, and the corporate media, this is what they were looking for before the speech started, for the president to stumble on the carpet, going down the aisle, for the president to go to the teleprompter and use a teleprompter and miss words, misname people, etc. That's what was out there.
Right.
More than the substance of what he was going to talk about, it was going to be 100% the eyes of the media on him doing some type of faux pas. That's where it was going to be. Now, I felt that the president would be, you know, practicing. He would be having people critique him, etc., as any campaign does. But in particular, especially critical because of the fact of the prosecutor's report and the media flurry that followed. So I expected him to do okay, to watch. He did better.
Yeah.
I mean, he was feisty, on fire. He mingled around. It took him, 25 minutes to get down the aisle. He was shaking everybody's hand, talking to people. Marjorie Taylor, three names, came up to him, et cetera. And when the speech ended and they cut it off, I know on C-SPAN, he stayed and he was walking around talking to people, which shows that he can communicate, obviously on one-on-one. But he was even better than I thought he would be. He delivered with an intensity. He went off the cuff with Marjorie Taylor Greene when she yelled out and he addressed her, directly. So look, we all know that he, would have been in a totally different position had it went another direction. We all know what would have happened. So that calmed, I think, a lot of people down. I think it made the Democrat base and the political structure of the Democratic Party feel a little bit more at ease.
No. And there were a bunch of people who were, maybe he's got a chance, and all that. I'm going, for me, it's the policies. Look, he did. He gave a good speech. He was on his game. Like you said, he was feisty. He was bringing it.
Right.
But it's still the policy stuff that I'm interested in. It's the kind of policy that I've been. And look, as somebody who wants to talk about policy more than performance, that to me is the important stuff. And I thought he did a good job of getting most of that across.
Well, he did. And you're right. Look, I started out with the trite stuff, but that's what they were looking for.
Media. Because they want that horse race of they want that talking, that narrative. They don't want to talk about policy because that actually takes work. You got to understand what they are. It's easier to mock somebody. And look, Trump does that better than anybody. And I think because of Trump, We've got a media culture that's looking for the worst, looking to be the worst versions of themselves. I just think that's part of where we are.
So, I mean, you're right about the policy of the speech, and he went into all the different things that had not been done, or the programs he had, and then they weren't followed up, or where they could follow up. You know, like the I think, which was a good move, where he said, "Hey, to his predecessor, join me, on the immigration issue." Now, I would like to have personally seen more of what's going to be on an agenda for next year, but I think there was enough. And I believe there wasn't more about next year because the president needed to go item by item that has been, debated in the media and is at the forefront. He needed to go item by item, economy, immigration, et cetera. He needed to do that because had he went strictly into where he's going to be if reelected, then there would have been so much criticism about, he didn't address the economy. What about this? He didn't address immigration. So he had to do that, including the Israel Gaza war.
No, one of the shots that Biden took at the media, I loved it. He said that we're living the greatest comeback never told.
Right.
And I thought that was a great shot because, the reality is he inherited a mess and they've done a good job at navigating, putting back together our supply chain, getting things moving again. I think he's done the best that you could do given the situation.
Right. And the other thing that he did, which was good, and I talked Saturday at length with a friend of mine, and she and I were talking. I was doing an hour and a half drive in the car, and we talked pretty extensively. Now, she doesn't like Biden, but we talked about the issues that he raised, and she liked those, which is interesting. The big pharma, for example, the fact of the Snickers bar, and you're getting less, but you're paying more for items. Those were things that, she couldn't debate. And she didn't say, "Oh, I'm just going to dismiss it." She said, "No, he made some good points." So it's very interesting if you look at some of the issues he brought up. And another one I think that he brought up that resonates with people, Democrat and Republican, although it doesn't with some of the Republican members of the House, is the fact that, you and I and your listeners most likely pay more taxes percentage-wise than the big boys, than the Zuckerbergs and the Bezoses and on and on and on.
No,
and we do that. And I think that resonates. I don't know how anybody can say, "Well, I'm a Republican. I really am glad that I pay more taxes percentage-wise than a billionaire. I'm happy with that."
No, I think the crux of the speech was, one, saving democracy, and I think he started off with that, and two, basic fairness, and I think that those are important frames and ones that I don't think can be debated. Although I got a lot of email from my right wing red hat friends who are wanting to debate with talking points. The reality is democracy is under attack, and this idea of fairness it resonates with people.
Well, and what was really under attack was the counter.
Oh, I wanted to get to that because, the fact of the matter is Biden, I think, does connect with working people. I think he does know what it's like to the cupboards to not be full and things to be a struggle. As where the Republican response, as I said at the beginning of the show, that the fact of the matter is this is what I think the current Republicans see as what working people are. And I looked at Katie Britt, and I looked at her in her kitchen that has no clutter. It's perfectly spotless. No working family's kitchen looks anything like that. You're not connecting with, one, the creepy speech, and two, in the kitchen. Wow.
Well, the reason you're seeing this background behind me, because if I move this camera, you're going to see the kitchen, not her kitchen. You're going to see the other one that you described. I also wanted to relate a personal story on this. when I was first elected 1994 and I started serving 1995, they picked me out in order to highlight me because I had a 16 Republican index in my district, right? So they wanted to really highlight me. So the speaker's people picked me out and said, you're going to answer Bill Clinton, his State of the Union address, and you're going to answer it on radio, because you know, they have a TV and a radio response. And I'm saying, okay, wow, you know, I'm in office a short period of time. And I had two members who pulled me aside who had been there a long time. And they said, look, you're new, you're a great person, we want to see you back. And you've been picked, air quotes, you have been picked to respond to the president of these United States. And they said, you can go ahead and do that. And keep in mind, in about 10 minutes, you can end your complete political career. I said, what do you mean? They said, people go up there, they aren't themselves, they go on, they destroy themselves. It was a great lesson that I learned. Now, obviously, she didn't learn that lesson, although she should have known better. Rick, it was just talk about over the top, dramatic, drama like I've never seen, to the point of tears, et cetera. Yeah, it was a train wreck. Everybody knows it. Everyone.
Yeah. No, Thursday, you know, after the rebuttal, everyone knew that was going to be the cold open on Saturday Night Live. And it was. Right. And if you haven't seen it, again, I highly suggest you look up Saturday Night Live's cold open with Scarlett Johansson. It was fantastic. And you know, it wasn't even mocking enough, to be honest. But here's where my take on this is. I believe that was planned. That wasn't a mistake. Really? I believe that was who they think the families in this country look like. That's the kitchen table that they imagine people are making decisions at. And I'm sorry, I don't know anyone that acts like that or has that kitchen.
Well, here's what surprises me about all this. Do people not have regular human beings that can pick up things, pick up on things, look at these, you know, to watch her once through, to take regular earthlings, I call them, and have them watch her do her practice and say, well, you know, no, wait a minute, you know? One time there was a Democrat elected official. He was a friend of mine, and I saw a preview. He said, what do you think of my commercial? And I said, well, okay, you're in the car, and, you know, they're filming you, and somebody else is driving, and that's all cool, except you don't have a seatbelt on. He's like, what? I said, you don't have a seatbelt on. People have to wear seatbelts or that, you know, they get tickets. So there's always a set of other eyes that look at things, and you pick up stuff because, hey, these high-tech people or people that put these together, you know, they sometimes don't know what they're doing. And I think you're correct. I never thought about it. You know, people said, hey, this will be cool. People will relate to this. They should have brought an average person, a mom, a soccer mom, and a housewife, and let them take a look at it and say, oh, no, that's not the way you do it.
So does this hurt her at all? Or do you think like I do, she's going to be just fine? Marco Rubio's okay. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is okay. I haven't heard from Bobby Jindal in a while, but
yeah, he had the water thing. Yeah, Rubio, you're right.
But you know, I think Jindal was one of the worst. But I think they're all breathing a sigh of relief because she's going to be remembered.
Yeah, she'll be. I mean, in the long term, if she tries to do a good job, she'll be okay. This will pass, but you need to learn a lesson when you get this 5 minutes in the spotlight. Think about what you're doing in the spotlight.
Yeah, and think about, you know, the honesty angle, because that whole sex trafficking story was just immediately debunked, you know, because it's all Biden's fault that happened here. No, it happened during the Bush years in Mexico. Wrong time frame.
Wrong president.
Yeah, you know, wrong time frame, wrong place.
That's the other thing. Does somebody not research this stuff?
And, you know, there's just so much to that. I mean, you know, because one of the right-wing narratives is that Biden does that. You know, he makes up stories. Well, she just did.
Right.
I don't know. Right. I don't know. So where does this take us now? I mean, this is the State of the Union. We're going to probably talk about a couple more days. But this is the beginning of the campaign. What do you see going forward?
Well, there's some interesting advice in an article today from the Lincoln campaign, which is a Republican anti-Trump group. And very interesting. And they're talking about the fact that some people within the Democratic Party are trying to argue with the media, you're not focusing enough on Trump's cognitive problems. And they're trying to, you know, go to the New York Times, Washington Post, and change some direction. And I think that the advice that the Lincoln group gave to them is good advice, which is, look, you know, go out and do your thing.
Yep.
Talk to people. You register people to vote. Voter turnout. Look at the issues. Drum the issues, because the Biden campaign has not made it a central point to take an issue and beat that drum. Oh, Biden, infrastructure. Oh, Biden, economic relief. Biden, student loans. You know, they haven't been able to get that done. So I think that they need to not do the cognitive war. Look, it's being raised about Trump, you know, as we speak. And then so it'll be Biden's cognitive abilities, Trump's cognitive abilities. And pretty soon that will be run into the ground where people will be like, whoa. On both of them.
Yeah.
So, and as the election draws closer, the issues are absolutely going to be the pinnacle point they've got to get back to. So I think from here, I also think you're going to see on the Trump end of this, you're going to see, I'm not going to say a kinder, gentler Trump, but you're going to notice if they're successful, which they may be 50-50, the campaign attempting to wean him at least a little bit from the stolen election. Look what they did to me. Now, I know this is going to be almost an impossible task, but they're going to try. I really think they're going to, you know, try to focus that part of it.
Well, they have to try. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. But we'll see. And look, we've got a long time till November. I'm sure we're going to see both sides trying to work the refs, trying to work the media. And I agree with the Lincoln Project's assessment. Run your game. Get out there and run your operation. Keep your head down. Keep moving. You know, like when I was coaching basketball, don't worry about the refs. I'll do that. You worry about running your plays, making your shots, doing that. I agree with that. I think that's a good start. But Bob, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time, and look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Okay. Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio Congressman, political analyst. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What did you think of the big State of the Union address? And, well, the response. Oh, the response. Back after this. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter @RickSmithShow, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So the president has said that he would support a bipartisan bill that could ban TikTok if Congress passes some legislation to do it. He said, if they pass it, I'll sign it. And I saw in 60 Minutes you had Marco Rubio on there talking about, you know, we need to, and Mark Warner was also interviewed. We need to, you know, go after TikTok because the algorithm, because it's basically political poison. I'm generally not someone who's thrilled with banning stuff, because then it just makes it that much more popular. But the fact that you've got the Chinese Communist government who has their tentacles in this, and they're feeding us this visual crack, interesting. And, you know, now you've got Kellyanne Conway, former senior advisor to Trump. She's being paid by the Club for Growth to advocate for TikTok in Congress. She's lobbying for TikTok. I guess she's had at least 10 meetings with lawmakers in the last couple of months to defend the app. So there is that. And again, like I said, I'm generally not thrilled with the idea of banning anything. But the fact of the matter is, you know, I know people who are addicted to this, to this stuff. And it's a lot of misinformation. Look, there's some good stuff and everything. But most of it, wow. And the fact that you've now got these deep fakes that are out there that are, you know, and it's you go back to, you know, something that LBJ was supposed to have said. You know, Johnson was supposed to have said that he wanted to accuse his opponent of you know, having relations with a bull, just to hear them deny it. And, you know, with this kind of social media, you know, that just throws chaos into all of this. And on both sides, I don't want the kind of misinformation and the kind of lies that come out of this stuff. Because there are people who are soulless. They don't care about the country. They don't care about the good, the common good. They don't care about anyone but causing chaos and mischief and getting attention and getting, you know, obviously money. So for me, I'm interested to see where this goes. Will Congress, you know, come together? Will this be one of those bipartisan moments? I don't know. And again, I don't know how you ban it. That's the other part. I don't know the mechanism by which you would go with a free and open internet. Does this now end up on the dark web somewhere? I don't know. Also interesting, the 538 blog. They have dropped Rasmussen reports as a polling agency. That's kind of a big thing. Now, I always look at Rasmussen as the extreme right-wing position because that's the polling that they do. It's always biased to the far right. And this is why I'm not a big fan of polls. I talk about them sometimes as, you know, a launching position. But for the most part, I don't know. Our polling just isn't, I think most of it's dishonest because it's how you phrase the question. It's what zip codes you decide. It's what platforms you decide to poll into. I think in a lot of spaces, you can come up with the response that you want. And that's my problem in all of this. Now with Rasmussen, I know the bias. I give it its due. Which is right into the trash heap. But, you know, in this moment, you know, finding that bias, I think that's the important part of evaluating any source whatsoever. So it'll be interesting to see if that actual TikTok actually gets banned. And, you know, if the 538 blog, you know, starts chopping some of the other polls that are out there. Because unfortunately, as I said, a lot of the polling, I don't know, kind of garbage. It just is what it is. But I want to hear your thoughts on the State of the Union address, on where we go from here. What kind of campaign you think we're going to be in for in the coming weeks and months? I've got a bunch of responses from folks that I didn't get to today, but I will at some point in the very near future. Just so much going on. So much going on. But you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. If you miss any portion of the program, as always, grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Just so much. And look, you know, these are exciting times. Like they say, may you live in interesting times. Oh, boy. Interesting times. But thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.